This is Pat Loika, and you're listening to Loika Mania. How's it going, everyone? You're listening to Loika Mania, episode 75. Wait, 75? I honestly didn't think we would get this far. Podcasting is a strange thing. Most of the time, you do it by yourself. You know, every now and then, you would have someone, you know, do a show with you and have guests and all that stuff. But I never thought when I first started this show that I would be reaching 75 episodes. And I'm very thankful for that. Very thankful for, you know, all the listeners who've been supportive of the show, and all the guests, and all the really, really cool people that have come out and talked about how much they enjoy the show. It's greatly appreciated, and I'm honestly humbled by it. But enough of that for now. Let's get right to it. Today we're going to be doing like a kind of an old school episode, similar to what we did in episode 50. Although this time there won't be a Brian Michael Bendis appearance at the end. You know, I'm going to talk about some stuff I checked out recently, and then take a quick break, and then we'll go into some listener questions. And, it should be fun. Hopefully I don't bore you too much, but sometimes it's just like that. So, anyways, let's get started. First thing I want to talk about is the X-Men by Chris Claremont and Jim Lee Omnibus, Volume 2. This is an amazing package. It's $125, and it's definitely worth your $125. But here's the thing. It collects several key storylines from the early 90s of the early 90s X-Men era. Everything leading up to Mutant Genesis and the Mutant Genesis era itself. This includes the Savage Land story that features Magneto and Rogue. You know, you all remember that by Jim Lee and Chris Claremont. It also includes the Shi'ar saga where Xavier was replaced by a Skrull and you know, all the shenanigans from space. Then it collects the Muir Island saga, the apocalypse, the big apocalypse story where Nathan Summers got infected with a technovirus and was sent to the future with the Ascani. From there, it has the Muir Island saga, which we all remember, which, you know, it bridges the gap between that era and the new era. And the new era, of course, is represented by X-Men number 1 to 11. It even includes some tie-in issues with Ghost Rider because X-Men 8 and 9 were a crossover with Ghost Rider 26 and 27. That's all in this hardcover. Now, yeah, you expect them to reprint a lot of issues in these omnibus books, but here's the thing about this one. Not only did they reprint those stories I mentioned, they also reprinted remember when Impel, back then it was called Impel before they became Skybox, they had a line of X-Men trading cards, all of them illustrated by Jim Lee, inked by Scott Williamson, colored by Paul Mounts. Well, they reprinted the entire card set there, all the way down to the bonus cards and the holograms. Everything is reprinted in there in full color, front and back, which is completely unexpected. And then they reprint several covers that Jim Lee had done for zines, like Amazing Heroes and Marvel Age stuff, and even includes articles and even his pinups from the Marvel Swimsuit Special were in there. It's ridiculous and it's so comprehensive, and it really lives up to the omnibus, you know, title. I mean, you know, you think of omnibus, you think one book collecting everything. Well, this took two books, but man, look at everything else that you threw in there. It's such a great package, and for $125, it's totally worth it. Of course, if you're smart and you know about our pals at CheapGraphicNovels.com, they have that for 45% off. Hit them up and pick up that book. Trust me, if you're a kid who grew up in that era, you will love this book. You will appreciate everything that's in this. A lot of the characters that, you know, we know and love, kind of, that was the era where they really shined. You know, if you love Rogue, Psylocke, Wolverine, Beast, and, you know, particularly X-Men Blue Team stuff, it's all there. And it's a wonderful package and absolutely worth it. on that note, though, be on the lookout for X-Men Genesis, Mutant Genesis, rather, 2.0 hardcover coming up in a couple of months. That has the first seven issues of the Jim Lee X-Men run. The objectiveless X-Men. It's going to be recolored, and I'm looking forward to that because I love the colorist's work. His name's Thomas Mason. He's been recoloring the X-Men stuff. He does some phenomenal work, and based on the samples I've seen online. So yes, check it out. And moving on to other things, book that I want everyone to pick up. You really should. And my God, this is the most beautiful book I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot of great comics, and nothing I think can match this. It's called Tale of Sand. It's based off of the Jim Henson screenplay. It's illustrated by Ramon Perez, with assists from Kalman Andrzejewski and Jordi Belair. This is a beautiful book. It was published by Arcaria, of course. Beautiful book. Probably, I think we're looking at the next level of comic storytelling here. It's just so beautiful. God, it defies my words, honestly. My words don't do it any justice. I knew Ramon Perez was a brilliant illustrator and a great storyteller. I mean, I've been a fan of his since I first saw his work on the JSA Wildcat story, from JSA Classified. And, I follow him around here and there, but man, this thing blows everything out of the water. In fact, it blows a lot of comic artists out of the water. I mean, honestly, I say this with no, without any prejudice towards anyone, but man, this is what comics are all about. This is the most beautiful, most vibrant, most haunting comic story I've read in a long time. And, it's partly because, of course, you can't take anything away from the script, but just the way Ramon Perez chose to handle it is just unbelievable. I mean, the art, the storytelling, the colors, everything is just phenomenal. I can't say enough about this particular book, and I really hope more people check it out. Once again, it's called Tale of Sand. You can get it through Amazon has it. I'm sure other places like Cheap Record Novels has it. But get it. Don't miss out on this because this is this book is a game changer in my opinion. And I really hope that by the end of the year that this book picks up numerous awards, especially Eisner's. If they don't win any Eisner's, I would be very disappointed, I'm telling you now. You can imagine that type of outrage I would have if this doesn't win any awards, because this is just too good to not be rewarded. So, Tale of Sand, do yourself a favor. You will thank me for this. I don't talk about books lightly. I don't refer to anything lightly as far as storytelling and just the craft of creating comics. This thing, man. Everyone should have a copy of this, plain and simple. Oh yeah, Tale of Sand. Another book I've recently read was Batman, The Black Mirror by Scott Snyder and Francesco Francavilla and Jock. My God. Scott Snyder, I mean, I have tremendous respect for that guy. He's a fantastic writer, and he clearly loves this job. He loves comics so much, just by the way he interacts with his fans. He loves this gig. He loves DC. He's very genuine, and I really appreciate that. And if you read the story, you will fall in love with his work too. This is of course a Batman. This collects the Detective Comics run of Snyder's, Francavilla's, and Jock's, and it's everything post Battle for the Cowl, everything before Bruce Wayne returned. And this is such a great story. Jim Gordon plays an important role as always. Dick Grayson is Batman here. And we deal with a very disturbing new villain, and I don't want to give anything away, but there's all kinds of this is just a great mystery, great Batman story, very heartbreaking too for certain characters, but You know, it's a hell of a thing. Reading this monthly must have been really painful because the cliffhangers were amazing. And, man, just the caliber of the art teams here. I mean, Francesco Francavilla is one of the best in the industry right now. Probably one of the most versatile and most... You know, he's one of those guys where you see his, you can tell it's his stuff, but at the same time, none of his stuff ever looks the same when he tries to do something different. You can just tell that it's him, though, because of, he has certain sensibilities as far as his graphic, as far as his design, and the way he lays, you know, things out on the page. And of course, the other artist in this book is no slouch either. He's Jock, one of the best. Probably one of the top five cover artists of our time right now, and here he is doing some interior art. He also did some covers. He also did covers for this run too, for a good number of the issues in the run. So yeah, check out this book. It's Batman: The Black Mirror. You will not regret it. And this is, you know, this is a perfect way to kind of get yourself acclimated to Batman right before you know, you pick up the new 52 Batman when it starts coming out in collected editions. So, yeah, Batman the Black Mirror. Don't miss out on it. And just a couple... Here's some quick little recommendations. Pick up the Strange Girl Omnibus by Rick Remender, Eric Nguyen, Jerome Pena, Andy Kuhn, and more. It's a great post-apocalyptic story, and also a great coming-of-age story too. You know, it's one of Rick Remender's first books, and I absolutely love this book. And the Omnibus is such a great package; you cannot go wrong by picking it up. The Nightly News. Fifth anniversary hardcover is out. It's oversized. It reprints not only the Nightly News story by Jonathan Hickman, it also includes a lot of the you know, scripts, some process stuff. Any process junkie who wants to know more about comics and the design behind it, you should pick up this book because it is a great package. And you know, you could tell this is a Jonathan Hickman book because he, you know, he treats his name like a brand. And if you look up the look at the spine of that book, and you see, you can clearly tell that it's one of his, because he has the stripe thing going. We have talked about that when we had him on the show. He has a way of separating himself from the pack, and it looks fantastic. The Nightly News, and I really hope that he gives Pax Romano the same treatment down the road, because that's one of my favorite comic stories ever. Couple other books I want to recommend. Pick up The Rocketeer Adventures from IDW, featuring a ton of great creators, including Tommy Lee, Edwards, and Kurt Busiek, and so much more. A beautiful collection of short stories featuring, you know, all these great pros doing their version of Dave Stevens' legendary creation. So check that out. A couple of series that I've been reading that I've been enjoying. I mentioned Rick Remender earlier. Be sure to pick up his awesome Uncanny X-Force. It's one of those books that never fails to amaze me every month, and it's always so beautiful. It's always always got great art, great stories. Last couple of months have been a challenging time because, man. Certain characters get lots of stuff happens to the characters. Some lot of bad stuff, but man, the art is amazing and the stories are fantastic. You can't go wrong with that book. So, Uncanny X-Force is probably the best thing Marvel puts out on every single month. So, check that out. Deathstroke. At least for the time being, is one of my favorite DC books right now. It's written by Kyle Higgins and illustrated by Joe Bennett. I highly recommend you look up the back issues over at your comics app, or just look for them in the stores. It's one of the most entertaining books out there. Kyle Higgins is going to be a big name someday, and based off of this, you can tell at least the guy is a great action writer. He writes some fun stories. And Joe Bennett, he's been one of my favorites for the longest time. I've been a fan of his since he was doing Amazing Spider-Man in the mid-90s. And he was phenomenal and even better this time around. So yeah, give that book a look. It's fun. It's carnage and devastation and killing, and it's, you know, it's fun. it's a great popcorn movie type of comic, and I think you guys will dig that book. Finally, I'm going to eat crow here. sometime back I was telling you guys, you know, I wasn't really into Spider Island because, I wasn't a big fan of the concept. But someone got me the hardcover, and of course I read it because I'm not gonna, you know, you give me something, you will go through the trouble of getting something for me. The least I could do is actually read it, so that, you know. I gotta admit, that was a fun story. The concept, I felt like the concept was kind of too high concept for me, but then you realize this is the same world where, you know, the Punisher got turned into a Frankenstein's monster, and all this wackiness happened, and this is conceivable, this is fine. The populace of New York City can gain spider powers for whatever amount of time. It was a lot of fun. Dan Slott and Humberto Ramos really brought their A game to this. It was a fun little event and very enjoyable. Lots of fun characters. It was, you know, I admit I was wrong about it, and I didn't talk about it because I wasn't feeling it. And now that I've actually read it, I'm like, hey, you know what? That was not bad at all. So. Yeah, that's you guys were right. speaking of that, though, one more book I want to plug is Scarlet Spider by Chris Yost and Ryan Stegman. And I never thought I would care for a book that starred someone called the Scarlet Spider, but I do. Chris Yost, of course, was a guest on the show, and so was Ryan Stegman. And they sold me on it, and I gave it a try, and you know what? They won me over. So Scarlet Spider is fun, and you know, it looks like it's going to be going in all kinds of different directions after the first, you know, the first story. But I'm excited to see where they go because, you put a Spider-Man in a locale like Houston, which is such a different city from New York, and you should at least be interested or intrigued by the possibilities of that, of having a character or someone like that in that city. Because that's not a city we usually hear about when we read comic books. You know, we're always hearing about New York or maybe the occasional West Coast city, but nothing in the Southwest. So, check out Scarlet Spider. It's going to be great. And I think that concludes this section of the show. Be right back, and we'll get right to the, you know, the Q&A section of this episode, which is kind of a doozy. So, I'll be back. I'm back, and I'm now going to answer some questions that were given to me through Twitter, email, and, of course, on Facebook. So we'll see how that goes. first up is a question from Jarrett Williams, the cartoonist behind Oni Press's the Super Pro KO. Volumes 1 and 2 are currently available, and Volume 3 is coming soon. If you like pro wrestling and you like just fun comics and Akira Toriyama stuff, for example, you like that kind of stuff, you'll want to pick up Super Pro KO by Jarrett Williams. It's like Scott Pilgrim meeting pro wrestling. That's probably the best way I could use to describe it. Anyway, his question is manscaping, yes, no, undecided, please discuss in length. Well, Jarrett, I myself am not a proponent for manscaping, but I would say that I support your right to choose. If you like to manscape, I say yes. If you don't like it, then no. Because whether you like it or don't like it, you have to learn to love it. Because it's the greatest thing going today. Okay, yeah, I think you'd appreciate that, seeing it's a pro wrestling reference. But seriously, I don't really care either way. You do what you want to do, sir. You go manscape all you want, and it's all good. Next question is from Daryl Taylor of the Taylor Network podcasts. He writes, what is the favorite and least favorite Bendis Avengers arc? Without question, my favorite is going to be the Return of the Hood, and when he tries to hunt down the Infinity Gauntlet and feature the Red Hulk joining the team. That is my favorite storyline. It's just I think it's a great escalation as far as the threat is concerned. Once again, the Hood is back, and yeah, the Hood may be played out for some folks, but I still enjoy that character, and I enjoy the fact that he was trying to go for something that was completely beyond his scope, like the Infinity Gems. So that story was fun. Great fights. John Romita Jr., Klaus Janson, and Dean White drawing pretty much every single Avenger of the time. It was fun. And just, you know, it was kind of the... and of course, the Illuminati stuff, which, you know, took place there, was also great. And I'm a big fan of that concept, and I would love to see more of it even after Bendis leaves. So, yeah, that's my favorite. And my least favorite, I normally don't like. I mean, you're not asking me for the worst story, so I'm thankful for that. You know, because I don't really like answering those type of questions. But as far as, you know, least favorite is concerned, I would say the breakout arc, maybe my opinion. Know, the weakest as far as storytelling is concerned. That's because everything that came after that was so much better. You know, it wasn't a bad story. You know, I liked it, but you know, you could tell it was just, you know, Brian was kind of growing into writing that book and writing those characters. And with each progressing issue, he just got better and better at it. So I think, yeah, Breakout maybe, you know, his weakest entry into the franchise, but certainly not bad. You know, it's just you know, when you start out, of course, your first story is not always going to be your best one. And I don't think that – I think that – that kind of suffered partly because of the art. I thought, not a diss to David Finch, because I think he's a fine illustrator, but I think the storytelling on that particular arc wasn't too great, because there were a lot of problems, like, you know, like Jigsaw all of a sudden having superpowers, Sauron breathing fire. There were a few things that here and there that were kind of strange, but in the end, it was okay. Just definitely not my favorite. So, yeah, hopefully that satisfies you as far as answers go. Next question goes from the KI, the underscore KIAI. Not sure how you pronounce it, but he goes, what's the my most wanted hardcover or collection you just know will never happen? Well, I live in a world where anything is possible, my friend, and I think any hardcover or trade may happen. But as far as some stuff that I want, I think may happen, I would love to see hardcovers of the Busiek, Nicieza, Bagley, Thunderbolts run, and the Zercher stuff too. I would like to see an Infinity Trilogy omnibus, because I love that. Actually, they're doing more. You know, DC's doing more omnibus stuff. I wouldn't mind seeing a No Man's Land omnibus, because they've been re-releasing the trades, but I would love that in omnibus form, just saying. And maybe an omnibus of the Giffen, DeMatteis, you know, JLA run. I think that'd be fun, too. I wouldn't mind seeing a Goon omnibus also, because I've kind of got behind on those trades for that run. So, yeah, I could think of thousands more, but there's really no point. You just don't know when they're actually going to start releasing stuff, and you never say never when it comes to that, because, come on, Flex Mentallo's finally coming out. Anything can come out now. The next question I have is from, I'm not really sure how to say it, but his Twitter handle is DJB_in_CBUS. And he goes, is it worth upgrading Iron Fist trade paperbacks to omnibus? It doesn't have lots of back matter. Yes, and yes. There's for one thing, the omnibus is just such a gorgeous package. It's oversized, of course, and it has the first three trades or hardcovers worth of Iron Fist material, and it is a wonderful, really well put together package. It has a lot of bonus material, lots of sketches, like mock-up art, bonus, and there's sketches and all kinds of other stuff. Definitely worth trying out, and, you know, it's just a gorgeous thing to have on your bookshelf. So go for it, man. Don't miss out on that, because it's a wonderful package. Yeah, go for it, and you'll thank me later, I promise. Before we jump to the Facebook questions, I'm going to go through some emails I received, include some comments as well as questions. So here we go. First question / comment email is from James McGee, and he writes, "Loving the podcast. Great interviews, especially all the process talk. I'm an aspiring writer, but I like hearing from all aspects of the creative process. Understanding how pencilers, colorists, etc. approach a comic helps inform the writing process, so the more diverse the guests, the better. And just as mentioned about the PWN show, hearing passionate fans talking about what they love is always welcome. I love the tone of the show. I think you call it a celebration of what we love in one of the year-end wrap-ups, and that seems very appropriate. There's too much negativity flowing around, and it's nice to hear something different for a change. As for what excites me in the coming year, there's a ton of great movies coming out. I'm giddy about Dark Knight Rises and The Avengers, especially. I reignited my love of comics this past year, so I'm just looking forward to more great books in the new year. Hoping the new 52 maintains the momentum they built so far, trying some new things from Marvel and the indies, trying like hell not to go broke doing it. I'm really keeping my eye on the Extreme Studios relaunch, and I read an unhealthy amount of Extreme when I first got into comics, and though time hasn't been kind to most of those books, the characters and concepts are strong, so I'm interested to see what new creators can do with them. Keep up the good work, and looking forward to another year of Lookamania. James." James, you mentioned Extreme. By the time this goes up, you would have heard, Prophet number 21 is out, and my God, that book was amazing. So I hope you checked out that book. It's a completely new look on that character and that concept. And thank you very much for the very kind words about the show. I love doing the show, as evidenced by the fact that I'm still doing it. And I enjoy greatly, being able to talk to creators and just be and just basically shoot the shit with them and just be, talk to and try to get into their head and find out, what makes them tick. Because, the art of comic creation is a beautiful thing. And I have so much respect for these guys. I can't tolerate it when people just shit on them, not knowing everything that they do, or people just saying, people that crap on these guys without learning, how it's done, without any knowledge of what it is to be these guys, it bothers the hell out of me. And I'm glad that you're enjoying the show. I'm glad you're enjoying the positivity. I actually got hate mail one time, telling me I'm too nice to my guests. I'm like, why would I treat my guests like crap? Because they're my guests. it's amazing how, the negativity sometimes. But, every now and then you get, really cool emails like the one you just sent me. And it's greatly appreciated. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy what we have coming up next. There's more to come, and this show is going to continually evolve and continually do different things. And I think you will like what we have in store. So thank you again, James, for the letter and for being a great listener. 2012 is going to be great. Next email comes from Cameron Hathaway, the host of Cammy's Comic Corner podcast. And he writes, "Brock Lesnar, better distinguished as a professional wrestler or UFC fighter?" And my answer to that is UFC fighter. Because by the time he went to the UFC, he brought his WWF or WWE audience with him. And those people, they spent a lot of money. And, they increased the buy rates of UFC. I mean, yeah, the UFC was riding high at that point. But, having Brock show up there the way he did just kind of elevated things. I mean, seriously, the only misstep they've done with Brock is by putting him in an Ultimate Fighter season where nobody gave a crap about him and Dos Santos as rivals, because Dos Santos is too much of a nice guy. But if you put Brock if you put Brock on the pay-per-view card, man, just look at the numbers for those shows, man. He was one of their biggest stars, and he brought something with him from his days in the WWE. He brought the pro wrestling sensibilities, the promos and interviews that he cuts whenever he was there. Yeah, that made him, that put him a step above and beyond some of the other competitors, which is, for better or worse, further proof that it's really about the personalities and not about the fights sometimes, which kind of sucks. But I thought Brock was great. Too bad he had such a short run. I do recognize and respect the fact that he knew when to quit. rather than force it. I think the injuries that he had gone through really tarnished his ability to fight. And, you know, I'm glad he kind of got to walk off. And, you know, I wish he didn't lose that fight with Overeem. I wish he got to go out as a winner, but, you know, we can't always have that. But still, hell of a career. He accomplished so much within such a short career in MMA. You gotta respect the guy for that. So, yeah, I think he made a bigger impact in MMA than he did in wrestling. But, you know, apparently he might be coming back to wrestling anyway, so we'll see where that goes. Follow-up question. What hero or villain could you see Brock portraying in a live-action comic book movie? Come on. The moment you see Brock Lesnar, you think that's the Juggernaut right there. Like, strap on that, you know, the Juggernaut armor, that helmet on him, and he's perfect. You know, he's got the size. He's got the right body type to be that character. You know, he's big and kind of stocky, you know. He's perfect. Follow-up to the follow-up. Would you go hunting with the man? And so what would you want to hunt? I would go hunting with Brock Lesnar. I'm fine with that. And you know what we would hunt down? We'd probably hunt down criminals or something. That'd be fun. We will kill criminals. I don't know. We will hunt down the greatest game of all, man. Yeah, I don't know. He seems really intense, though, and he seems like a pretty fun guy to a certain degree, but I don't know. I would not want to be near that guy with a gun, because you never know if that guy could snap or something, so whatever. Next question is from letterer and illustrator Clayton Cowles, former guest of the show. He writes, "Throughout the world, the comics industry and its fans are often perceived with a negative stigma. Comics are seen by many as an arrested development playground for man-children, overflowing with anti-heroic spandex, tough guys, and their hyper-voluptuous female counterparts, punching their ways through high-octane explosions, gritted tooth one-dimensional introspection, and peak adolescent sexual fantasia. This perception of comics as a whole is hugely misguided, but every so often something will pop up to validate these labels, not just in mainstream, but with the fan base. What would you most like to change about the mainstream view of comics, and what, if anything, would you change about the comics medium in this regard?" I think, as far as the fan base is concerned, I can't really force people to change because people are people. You know, people act a certain way, people are raised a certain way, and then, you know, people are the product of the environment that they were raised in. As far as, you know, how they affect the industry, you know, I think the first thing I would change would be, you know, if you want to change the environment of the type of folks that we have, I think you have to start at, you know, the level, you know, from where they get comics. I mean, comic stores, for example. If it was up to me, if comic stores want to carry books, they have to adhere to certain standards, I think. As far as, you know, technologically, they need to really treat it like a business and not like a passion hobby business, you know, because a lot of those tend to fail and a lot of those tend to be mismanaged depending on the mood that they're in. So I would start at the business level, I would start at the shops, make sure that they have to live up to certain levels, you know, kind of like, you know, restaurants have to adhere to certain things so that they can keep themselves in operation. I would do the same thing with comic stores. But again, that's me. and then if you have nice, cleanly lit stores that are pleasing to the eye, with very diverse staffing or whatever, I think people start looking at comics like, hey, this, you know, people start looking at comics like the way they would look at, electronics or other more mainstream type of shops. So you improve the comic store experience, it will move forward towards like the way people act inside these stores, because now, you know, it's not just gonna, hopefully it expands beyond, you know, the interactions between fans be more than just bitching about what book came out this week that didn't look good, to, you know, actual discussions about, you know, the craft and the technique. I don't know, honestly. I'm starting to ramble. But, you know, I would change, you know, the shops first. I would change the experience there. And then hopefully that just kind of affects everything else from there. You know, it just kind of moves forward. The thing I would change about the medium, another thing I would change, actually, you know, I mentioned shops. I think we should start really enforcing the ratings that we put on our books. Like, if it's a teen book, it has to be teens buying the book and all that stuff. You know, people should be carded if they're buying a Vertigo book or something, 18 and older. And you just have to, you know, we have to kind of watch our backs and you know, treat this thing like a business. And once we start taking this as a business seriously, you know, I think it will ripple through, and eventually fans kind of mature with it. Like, you know, the more immature fans kind of, you know, I don't know. I'm just speculating here, and obviously I'm rambling, but I think, you know, aside from that, you know, as far as the industry itself, like, you know, between editorial and corporate levels, I mean, I would say be more mindful of other fans. You know, you can't keep catering to the same fans forever. You know, those fans will not always be there. But, you know, you should expand your fan base. You know, like women, like there's, you know how many women I know read comic books? I certainly talk with more women that read comic books than men these days, and I'm not even joking. Cater to them. Give them stuff they like, but don't pander. Don't treat them like they're dumb. Do something, you know. You know, the Marvel the Adventures books or the kids lines for both Marvel and DC. You can come up with more, you know, engaging stories without dumbing yourselves down. There's a lot of the comics that we were buying in the early 80s or the late 70s. They were all written for the same age group. You know, they were all being written like they're thinking that, you know, kids or maybe adults are buying them. And then you got to produce stuff like Walt Simonson's Thor and fucking Frank Miller's Daredevil, for God's sakes. You can write intelligent stories. You can write, you know, cool, engaging stories that will hook you in and without having to dumb it down, without having to pander to anyone. So I would say the most important thing we should do is that we, you know, we respect our audience. We, you know, we treat them with stories that we would want to read, and, you know, in the end, it just goes from there. I mean, people will pick up on it, people will learn to accept it and like it, and, you know, yeah, again, I apologize, I'm rambling, but this is such a topic. This is such an important topic. I think people really should be more mindful of everyone else, and people should respect, you know. If you're in the comic store and you see girls there, don't fucking look at them like they're some kind of, you know, some kind of piece of meat or some kind of attraction. They're there like you buying comic books because they want to read that stuff. You know, it's that sort of thing that bothers the hell out of me. And then the way people react when I mean, even in the art itself, I mean, you know. This is beyond anything I could say, but seriously, it's, you know, just the only thing I can say is, you know, be considerate of other people and be considerate of other people's feelings before, and you know, it just ripples from there. It goes from there. So I hope that answers your question, Clay. And I know I rambled, but I tried. But this is one of those things that will require more than just me answering a question on the podcast. Next up are some Facebook questions, and we will start with Jim Dietz, who asks, "How is it that one man can be so awesome?" Well, Jim, honestly, there is just no, I don't know, man. I've gotten a reputation over the last few years, but I'm just being who I am. You know, I don't consider myself to be super awesome. A lot of people tend to think so, and I appreciate that they think highly of me, but, you know, there's really no way for me to live up to any kind of reputation that I get. So I do appreciate that people think highly enough of me to do that. Next is Ben Christian, a creator for, you know, he's a co-creator of The Independence with artist Corey Smith, and he is also debuting that book with the Double Feature app later this year. And he writes, "The vaunted Loika library is on fire. You can only save what you can carry. What do you grab?" Well, Ben, I'm going to be honest with you. The only thing I'm going to grab from that room is my hard drive containing all of my photographs. That's it. As far as the comic collection goes, the library, you know, if part of it goes up, then all of it goes up. Yeah, you can't take all that with you when you die. You know, it may seem like I'm the type of guy who likes to buy everything and I like to have everything, but you know what? If I can't have everything that I have, you know, I'm just so fine letting it go. I mean, if it burns, then it all burns. And I could always buy another new comic next week to read. And in the end, you know, I'm okay. I can live with that. It's just material things. And while I love all of that stuff, you know, in the end, what matters is I could save myself and have this little item, this hard drive full of memories from all the years I've been capturing on photo. And that's more important to me than worrying about what books to pick. Because seriously, there's so many books here that there's so many books here that I absolutely love and enjoy that I'm gonna spend too much time trying to think of what to get. So fuck it, just let it burn and take your memories with you instead. So that's it. It may sound like a cop out, but that's just how it is. Chris Mays, our my good pal and graphic designer, and one of the most beloved members of this podcast, even though he doesn't appear regularly on the show. Well, actually, no, he does appear regularly. His work appears regularly on the cover art. And he goes, "If any comic company gave you full creative control on any character or book, what would it be, and what would you do with it?" If they gave me carte blanche on anything, I would probably revive supervillain team up. I would have Doctor Doom, Magneto, and Thanos teaming up for something. Probably on some kind of quest, and they'll fight other supervillains. It'll be like a cool supervillain rumble of some kind. I don't know. It's too soon to tell what I would do with it, but yeah, it would be something like that, because I'm a big fan of the bad guys, you know, the supervillains and the antiheroes. I think they're just so much more fun, and you know, and it's always fun to kind of explore what goes through those characters' heads. Anytime Doom has had his own book, that's always great. And of course, the Thanos quest is a classic. And of course, Magneto, the current Magneto book by Scott Young, Magneto, not a hero, is great. And seeing these guys as protagonists is always something that I enjoy. So yeah, that's what I would do. And I'd probably throw Namor in there too, or a few other folks, because Namor is you know, Doctor Doom's bro. So I imagine he'd be showing up. I bet it'd be cool to pit Thanos against Apocalypse or something. I think that'd be a fun little foil for him there. We'll see. I do appreciate that question, though, because that's a lot of fun. Excuse me. Next question is from Corey Jackson. He goes, "Do you feel that because of the technological age that we live in, the comic book fans are becoming too critical of books and their creators?" I'm sad to say it's true. Because now we have a mouthpiece, and now we know that they can hear us talk. So some of us, unfortunately, tend to abuse that fact and just act really shitty towards the creators whose works that we either like or dislike. I know a lot of creators who enjoy getting feedback because they don't get enough of it. Because, you know, making comics, at least in a lot of instances, is a very solitary thing. And you don't get any feedback except from your editor or whatever. You don't hear from anyone who actually reads the books until the book is out. And, you know, sometimes they get really excited that, you know, the book is out, and, you know, finally hear what people thought of it. And then next thing you know, some asshole shits on them and talks about how terrible it was or whatever. And this is why That's why I try to avoid being negative, you know. I mean, if it's really bad, you may hear me talk about it, may hear me mention it, but that's it. Or the worst thing you could ever hear from me is saying, "I read a really bad comic, I'm not going to name what it was." Because sometimes you have to get it out of you. But there's no need to insult whoever worked on the book. There are better ways to do it. And some people are very abusive. You know, guys, like especially like the bigger names, you know, the bigger names are just so, they get the worst of it, you know, and it's truly unfortunate sometimes. And I really wish they'd come up with I wish there was a way for people to just be respectful, you know, be more respectful, more, you know, like I said, be more considerate of everyone else, you know. So yeah, that's it. I mean, I think we you know, it's a good thing and a bad thing that people have instant access to creators. But man, you know, be respectful. Treat them like you want to be treated, because they're human beings like you and me. You know, we're all human beings, and they get hurt too, even though they try not to show it. There, it still sucks when someone kind of shits on you. So don't be an ass about it. Seriously, anyone here that listens to this, if you have Twitter or if you have any kind of social networking and you're connected to any of the creators that you like, be sure to stop by every now and then and tell them how much you enjoy what they did, because it goes a long way for these guys. So that's that. Ben Christian returns and he goes, what one book do you think will surprise everyone becoming the sleeper hit of 2012? I think there's only one book worthy of it right now, and it's Tale of Sand by Ramon Perez. Yeah, get that book. I talked about it earlier in the show. It is the most beautiful book I've ever seen. Absolutely phenomenal art, great storytelling, and very haunting. This is the book that I think people will be talking about for a long time once they see it. And it's totally worth your money. Go get it. It's from Arkea. You could probably get a good discount over at Amazon or over at cheapgraphicnovels.com. So, yeah, go get that. Chris Mays writes, what do you expect this year of Leukamania to be like, and where do you see it in the future? This year of Leukamania, I think we're kind of be evolving up a little bit more. We'll of course be doing what we do best and what we enjoy doing, and that's talk to creators. But you know, I won't be doing that. You know, I won't be doing that. I won't have that as a sole thing that we do. We're going to be doing. How do I explain this? You know, what I plan on doing as far as a month is concerned, like every fourth episode of the month is going to be a roundtable type of show. I'm going to have friends on or other podcasters or maybe roundtable creators or something like that. And we'll just talk about random topics or talk about what we're into or what we loved about the month. So we're thinking of doing that. Of course, we're going to be doing the creator interviews. We'll be doing more topic-based stuff, too. Like next episode, episode 76, is actually a topic-based episode where I talk to Inker/Eisner-nominated cartoonist Jerry Alanguilan. And, yeah, we interview him straight from Manila, actually. We interview him my first Asian call interview. And it was a fun interview. And we're going to talk about the kind of dying art of comic book inking. So that's next episode. And then we're going to have more diverse group of creators on. We're going to have some more creators that are returning. Brian Michael Bendis will be returning on the show soon, and we'll kind of talk about his upcoming exit from the Avengers and talk about Moon Knight and a few other things here and there, like Ultimate Spider-Man featuring one of the coolest new characters to ever debut, Miles Morales' best friend Gank, who kind of looks like me. We'll get into that. There's going to be a bunch of other special shows. Like if you downloaded 74.1 or the bonus episode from last week, you will notice that we're getting a bunch of like Marvel people talking wrestling, and we'll be having more wrestling related stuff here since people apparently missed it. But you know, they should also be listening to Pro Wrestling Noise. You know, we're gonna have all kinds of fun stuff, and we're gonna have a bit more fun. And as far as the interviews go, we're gonna be a bit looser with the interviews and more conversation based, and not on questions. And probably go more, you know, try and go deeper into the process stuff. And we have an upcoming episode with Mike Choi, which I think is gonna be, which is a fantastic episode. I think a lot of people will really love it because we just geek out over the stuff we like. And Mike Choi, such a fan of stuff, such a fan of comics, you will fall in love with that guy. It's a wonderful interview. So that's coming soon too. So yeah, Chris, thank you again for your part of the show, for the cover art you produce for us every week. You know, you have become an integral part of the show. That, you know, some of the guests I have on actually are pretty excited just to see the what you come up with for their episodes. So yeah, there's that. And people listening to this should check out chrismays.com to check out some of his work, including I think once everything's set up, you should be able to read the short story that we did together called We've Met Before. It's a romance story that I wrote and he drew, and it was a phenomenal thing. Probably one of the best things I ever worked on, if not the best thing I've ever written. So yeah, chrismays.com. Thanks again, Chris. Moving on, we have more comments and questions. First off, there was one question on Twitter that I forgot to read earlier, and it's from our buddy Paul Montgomery, aka @FuzzyTypewriter of the Fuzzy Typewriter podcast. And he asks me a very important question and goes, how did you get so handsome? Well, I say, it's clean living, saying your prayers, eating your vitamins, and believing in yourself. Because what you're going to do when leukemia runs wild on you, blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't know. I just had to reply with a Hulk Hogan related thing. I don't know why. Anyway, back to the Facebook stuff. Antonio Cuneo, our sometime co-host and my co-host at the Pro Wrestling Noise podcast, writes, hey, man, love you, bud. Congrats on 75 episodes. And appreciate you for having me on for a bunch of these to talk movies, comics, wrestling, and whatever. Always have a good time talking to you. Well, Antonio, the feeling's mutual. You've always been one of my best friends, and I've known you for such a long time now. So I'm glad that I got to share the podcasting experience with you, because clearly you enjoyed it. And Antonio actually joins me in the Mike Choi episode that's coming up in a couple of weeks. I just mentioned earlier, so you get to hear us all geek out about comics and all that. Yeah, Antonio is one of those guys who is such a fan. He is so respectful of the industry and the creators and all that stuff. He is he's a good dude, and I'm glad he is part of the crew here. Next up, I got some congratulations from both Gary Lima and Tragic Antihero. They just say, congratulations, Pat. And I say, thank you both for the well wishes. Jose Morales writes in, congratulations, Pat. What's the easiest part of the podcast and what's the most annoying? Are you planning on getting any other creators aside from Marvel creators? Well, Jose, the easiest part about the podcast is actually the recording itself. Once we start recording, it's great. Things just flow by. I think the only, as far as the annoying parts go, the only thing that really annoys me is, because it's such hard work, the scheduling. Scheduling can be such a pain sometimes, and dealing with, sometimes people are unavailable, sometimes people have to reschedule, and things kind of fall apart every now and then. But in the end, it's all good. The shows come out fine. We have fun. We talk to creators, and when the end result, the worst case scenario is that you talk to someone weeks after you want to do it, or or something rather major that you guys wanted to talk about and ended up being you end up being behind a bit. That's always a thing that you may run into. But in the end, you get to talk to the guys. You get to get what you want out of them as far as once you get what you want out of them and it turns out good, you can't help but be happy. Whatever annoying thing you went through to get to that point just goes away because you're too happy with the fact that you got to talk to Brian Michael Bendis for an hour or more, so it's all good. Next question is from Jermaine Exum, and he writes, and by the way, Jermaine is a retailer. He's behind Acme Comics over in North Carolina, one of the best retailers I know of, and he's also a podcaster. He does the Acme Way Projector podcast. Anyway, he writes, you are the convention master. I've said you could write a book on how to correctly attend comic conventions. What are some of the strangest things you have seen and done at a con, or the coolest things you have seen at a show or after party? Strangest things... there aren't really that many. I mean, that's every now and then you'll see those weird, people. I mean, really, the weirdest thing you ever run into are furries. And you know what? God bless them. They're having fun. But yeah, I would see the occasional... usually, the weird things I would see are, involve cosplayers or whatever. And sometimes there would be, random things like flash mob stuff or whatever. And they're fun. It's ridiculous sometimes, but I have no problem with it. Strange is good. Strange, makes things exciting. Coolest things I've seen... oh, man, there's so many. I remember 2007 when we were leaving the convention center at San Diego at 7 p.m. Everyone's vacating the building, the exhibit halls. Doors are being closed. Everyone's kind of jammed up on one side of the street about to enter the Gaslamp Quarter, and Harbor Drive's right in the middle. And then on the other side of Harbor Drive, like, you know, like slowly making their way down Fifth Avenue, there was this gigantic horde of zombies. There's like a zombie walk going on, and we didn't see it come. We didn't know it was coming. And so, you know, one side of the street, they started letting us cross. But as we were crossing, a long train passes by the railway, which effectively stopped, which makes the zombie horde kind of halt on the other side of the street because the train was going. But there was one of those big and really long trains, and it was going for about 15 minutes. And after 15 minutes, all of a sudden, there's a gigantic mob of zombies that are like right there at the rail. And when the rail, when the rail posts go up, all of a sudden, from one end, it's a sea of humanity leaving the convention center. On the other side, the sea of zombies going in, and they just kind of crash into each other. And it was one of the most amazing things I've seen. I was lucky enough to have been there and take some photos. But yeah, it was a surreal experience. And one of those things you're just like, man, I fucking love going to Comic-Con. And then And then, of course, there's all the interactions I've had with pros. I remember trying to take a photo by the Asgardian throne that they brought to Comic-Con in 2010. You know, to promote the Thor movie, they brought the throne in their room there. And next thing you know, freaking Brian Bendis freaking photobombs me, and he calls us nerds for taking pictures and just all that fun stuff. I think having a really good conducting yourself well online and kind of getting notoriety through that can really improve my convention experience. So it's always weird to me and always cool when like some guy I don't recognize calls me out. It turns out the guy is like a pro and a writer or an artist or whatever, and it's surreal, and it's a very humbling thing. So it's always nice to know that someone you respect pays attention to. And maybe it's because you pay them, maybe it's because I pay them enough attention and give them the proper respect too, But yeah, it's nice to have that sort of thing happen to you all every now and then. So yeah, that's it. I hope that didn't bore you with that answer. Next comment is from a good pal, Adam Witt, co-host, one of the... a man of distinguished taste and one of my favorite people in the world. He also hosts his own podcast called Comics Will Break Your Heart, and he goes, "You are the wind beneath my wings." Oh, Adam. But seriously, thanks for being a part of the show, and thank you for posting a comment, at least. Final question I have is from Brian Lipsitz, and this is a very apropos question. He goes, "Congrats. I know it's hard to narrow down, but what are some of your favorite moments from Loikamania over the past 74 episodes?" It's kind of hard to narrow down, but I'm very appreciative of the fact that people people are actually listening to the show and people actually respond to me. Every now and then I would get a comic pro telling me how much they enjoyed the show, and I think that's it means the world to me, because this show is, it is a celebration of all that stuff, all the things they do and all the stuff we love. And I'm glad that they're appreciating it, and I'm glad that, it's getting some kind of notice. I mean, I would do the show with or without, that love that they give back. But the show means a lot to me. It gives me a chance to talk to creators and really spend time and just, learn more about them and their work. And anytime someone tells me a story that I've never heard before about their career or their breaking in and all that stuff in the business, that's a moment for me. I always appreciate those, and more than anything, whenever they would decide, like when John Hickman broke the news about you feel better now, I thought that was an amazing thing. Like, hey, someone broke a piece of news with us. there's so much more. I'm always thankful. I mean, every new episode I do is my favorite one, because any time I have someone on and they talk and we spend the time that we spend together on the phone or on Skype, you realize, my God, this is the guy that draws this book, or this is the guy that writes this book, and he just spent an hour talking to me and my buddy here, that really makes the whole experience so much more special. So I don't have a single favorite moment, but man, put me in, have me talk to a creator, and we spend the time we do. it's, you know, that's my favorite moment, at least for that time. So on that note, we have reached the end of the questions. Thank you all so much for those who sent questions in. It's much appreciated. We'll be back next week with Jerry Allenguillen, and we will talk about, you know, the state of state of inking in the comics business and what's going on with it and where we think it's going. We will have Mike Choi in episode 77, and there's going to be a bunch more coming up. Don't forget to check out my other show, Pro Wrestling Noise, over at deliberatenoise.com/pro/wrestling. It's also part of the comic book Noise, Deliberate Noise network of podcasts that's being run by Derek Coward, who I have to thank for, again, putting up with this, putting up with me and my nonsense every now and then. Again, thanks to Chris Mays, Adam Witt, and Antonio Cuneo, who are all integral parts of the show, as far as I'm concerned. Thanks to all the fine guests we've had since episode 50, like Brian Michael Bendis, Paul Cornell, Jeff Lemire, Mark Brooks. Man, there's so many names to drop. it's been a fantastic 25 weeks, you know, and I really appreciate everyone who listens to the show, all of you who talk about it, who leave us. Please leave us feedback on iTunes, by the way, because I would love that more than anything else. All the guests, once again, I started naming names, but I stopped for some reason. Clayton Cowles, Declan Shalvey, Kalman Andrzejewski, Ali, John, Cameron, and Angela from the Comic Roundtable podcast. We have... God damn, there's so many people who've been on the show. Ryan Pinagos, H&M, Ryan Stegman, Mike Carey, Kieran Gillen. Man, I couldn't believe I've had all of you guys on over the last few weeks. Chris Yost, Scotty Young, Matt Fraction, Kevin Mellon, Sean Pryor, Ron Richards, Caroline, and Sean, and... Mike McCone, man, so much good stuff, so much fun times. I really appreciate it. I can't believe all of this just happened within the past few weeks. Phil Noto, Aubrey Sitterson, Dean White, Brandon Jerwa, God, all these great creators and fans and listen and podcasters who've been on the show. Thank you all so much. You guys have been very, very cool to spend your time with me to talk about whatever we decided to talk about. So thank you all. Everyone listening, be sure to go to all my social networking. You can friend me on Facebook and by hitting up about.me/PatLoykin. It takes you to all of my my social networking. You know, follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/PatLoykin. Of course, once again, I'm going to reiterate iTunes reviews, please. Leave us a review. Help us gain some more visibility and get more people to check out the show, because this is the show is about love, and we're all about love in this comics and the business that this is all in. So thank you all again for listening. We will have promise you nothing more than more fun guests, more fun shows, and we're gonna have the next, we're gonna have so much fun, and the time episode 100 hits, you won't even realize how much we've been doing. So you guys take care, and remember, never ever be ashamed of loving the comics, the movies, the TV, the music that you love, because you know how you love them, and no one should ever take that away from you. So you guys take it easy, take care, and we'll see you next week. Joker and the Queen.
views and opinions expressed by the guests and those providing comments are theirs alone and do not necessarily reflect the views of Pat Loika. You can reach Pat by sending an email to loikamania@gmail.com. This has been a Dial R Studios production.